Hello, my friends. Welcome back. This is Andrea Eppolito, celebrating life, luxury, and above all else, love. Today, I am very excited because I have an icon of the industry with us, Marley Major, otherwise known as the Party Goddess. Hello, Marley. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Oh, it's a joy. So I don't expect you to remember this because it was 400 years ago.
I do remember.
But I heard you speak at Engage at the Mauna Lucia, and the title of your presentation was, "But Are You Making Any Money?"
Yes.
Which is also the name of a book that you wrote.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a weird title, but the title means something.
Fantastic. And, you know, I was about a year and a half into my business. I knew the creative.
Right.
I knew as an artist how I saw the world. I knew how I wanted it reflected back to me. And even though I had gone to college, even though I had a degree, even though I did all the things, right, I had never gotten proper business training.
Right.
My husband has an economics degree, but the "Are You Making Any Money?" title really kind of caught me because my initial thought was like, well, I'm here. Of course I'm making money. And then I was like, but am I?
And then you log into your bank account and you go, ew. Is there like,
well, I was like, can I pay my bills? Can I buy shoes? That I guess I'm making money. But it's also a big a question of how you approach the financials. And you had such a great backstory that I was hoping you could share today.
Sure. Well, it is I'm a big one, especially when I wrote my book, we didn't have social media and lives didn't look as perfect as they look, right? We just had magazines and newspaper articles and things that made my life always look very amazing. And I decided a long time ago that I would out myself before anybody else could. So there would be nothing to discover. And ironically, what I learned during that process was that the more honest I was about what it was really like to be in business and really like to quote, be the party goddess, the more I seemed to resonate with people. And that was never my goal, but my goal was to just tell the truth. And what I found was, you know, in this very competitive industry, LA, New York, London now, I mean, these are very, very, very competitive markets. And so if you just go to an industry event or you just go on social media, you think everybody has it figured out, but you, like, everybody knows how to do it, but you. And I just got sick of that, maybe because I'm the underdog always, but I came up with a different way. And so my path is, I'm from Pasadena, California. I mean, I was born in DC, but then I ended up going back to DC to go to Georgetown, got my business degree, love business. All I've ever wanted to be is in business. And my junior year, the summer before my junior year, I didn't have anything that I really wanted to do that was exciting to me. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Paris and go to cooking school. And so I did, and I spent the summer in Paris, and then I came back and I ran into my professor, one of my professors, the first week of school. And we did do a speech on what we knew more about than anybody else. Well, at Georgetown, that was absolutely nothing because I always felt like I was behind everybody in economics and everything else. And my mom was like, why don't you just do it about French cooking? Like, you for sure know more about that than anybody else. And I was like, okay, good, done. So I go, in those days we're developing our film, and I went to get my film developed in Georgetown. I ran into my professor and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in your class and I'm so excited. I'm doing my speech on French cooking, and I have an interview with the chef from 1789. And she was like, oh my gosh, that's my favorite restaurant. And for anybody who knows DC, it's a very fancy restaurant in Georgetown that has been there forever. And I didn't know the chef from 1789, nor had I ever thought about interviewing the chef from 1789. And so I was like, what the frick am I doing here? So I go back and I'm in tears, you know, to my roommates. And I said, I just told my professor, like, I don't know what I'm thinking. Now I've got to get this interview. I'm going to be thrown out of school. You know, the usual, my drama. And my roommate was like, listen, they have this new chef. He's from New York. He's not going to know that he can say no. So, like, let me see what I can do. Long story short, she set up this interview. And I was like, okay, thank you. I just need to meet him. And just so I can, like, not be lying on my resources page or whatever. And so I took one look at him and decided I needed to marry him. Well, that proposed a lot of challenges because, number one, he was 20 years older than I was. Number two, I had only met him for 5 seconds. Number three, he worked in the bowels of this kitchen, you know, in Georgetown. I would never see him again. So I was doing this interview the whole time plotting and scheming, like, how am I going to see this guy again? Because I can't marry somebody that, you know, I can't see. These days, of course, we know you can't. You can get catfished together. But I was like, how am I going to do this? So I noticed, and this is kind of like the first of business lessons to be applied. I noticed that I would have to see him again and it would have to be regular. And why should he hire me when obviously, you know, yeah, I'd been to cooking school, but it's not like I had some big restaurant experience. And I noticed two things. One, that they had souffles on the menu, and souffles are notoriously difficult to execute for a restaurant. Number two, his Spanish wasn't that great. And everybody in the kitchen spoke Spanish and I spoke Spanish. So I kind of, in anticipating that I'm going to be making my pitch, was sort of like, well, and I'm this, you know, fluent speaking, Spanish speaking souffle chef, you know, which was a stretch on every plane. Let's just put it that way. And then I said, well, listen, can I follow up like next week? Can I just shadow you, you know, kind of like more research type of thing, like as if I was getting my PhD in, you know, French cooking. But he said, sure. He later admitted he didn't think I would show up, but I did. And so then I ended up like, well, can I come back? And net, I would get out of school at 2:30, and then 3 days a week, I would work 3:30 to 11:30 in this kitchen. And I all trying to marry him. Well, you know, of course, nothing ever happened. And then
you didn't marry him.
What?
So you didn't.
Well, hang on, pause. Go pause.
Okay.
That whole junior year, nothing happens. I go to cooking school again in Normandy before senior year. I decide, okay, I plot and scheme the whole summer. I'm going to ruin his life by quitting, and I'm his best employee, which I was. Because, of course, I would pick up every shift under the sun. You know, I mean, I was just trying to work a shift to be in front of him. So I came back and I plotted and schemed, like, okay, and I, you know, I can't do this. My school load's going to be too much. And he was like, oh, okay, would you like to have dinner? So the bottom line is, we got engaged the month after graduation. And there you go. And then the drama begins. Because what do you do if you marry a chef? And if you ever want to see them, you get into the restaurant business.
Yeah.
So we came back to California, and fortunately, another like business lesson buried very deeply was we bought the land. And so we started a lot of reconstruction, and we started the restaurant. And then yours truly, once again, to get in her own way, decides that I have one goal. That is to do $1 million in sales my first year. So I graduated college at 21, 22. I'm in the restaurant business, do $1 million my first year. Awesome. Like a lot of things, however, I did not like think it through and think you can do $1 million in sales, but that $1 million in sales, it doesn't work so well if you're spending 1.2. Okay. So I was just digging a bigger hole. So the more customers I got, effectively, the bigger the hole I was. And I was like, how can this be? Like, I have a business degree. It's not even like I went to study art history. I have no excuse whatsoever. But my challenge was in making the tough decisions between what I needed to do and what I learned in school and the reality of entrepreneurship. And I think that's where so many of us get stuck. It's just, you know, it's like, oh, yes, this person should produce this amount of product, blah, blah, blah. And if they don't, then you warn them 3 times. And in California, you can fire them and then they'll sue you, but you get it. But it didn't seem to work that way for me. I just couldn't seem to have these magical results. And so I ended up digging myself a deeper and deeper hole. And, you know, amazing for romance is financial trouble. And so my answer to that, again, rocket scientist, was to get pregnant. So why not be pregnant and having marital problems and financial problems and, you know, working 7 days a week? I mean, it's a recipe for magic. So have this baby. Okay. The baby can be in front of the cappuccino machine because it's noisy. No one will notice. We're busy. Thank you very much. So fast forward, thank goodness we had always been getting offers to partner up for the restaurant because we own the land. So we would keep getting offers, and my dad would say, listen, you love the parties. Why don't you do this? Well, you know, focus on that. Because by now we had taken over a banking facility. We had started a catering company. And And I was like, no, because I, you know, was hell bent on, I am not going to look like I failed, and I was not going to fail. So then my hand got forced again, and I had a really bad skiing accident. And my dad was like, this is ridiculous. Now you can't even walk. Like, your whole job is to stand, and you are in a leg brace going to physical therapy 3 days. I should have been in regular therapy 3 days a week. But so net, I was like, fine. We partnered up with the restaurant. The chef and I go through a very like public divorce as far as, you know, living in Pasadena is like a crowd of one. And I went on, was like, okay, I'm going to start the Party Goddess. And that was in 2000. But as a lot of us have figured out in life, if you do not get to the root of your problem and solve it, you cannot paint the house white and hope that the termites have just mysteriously gone. They had not. So I was focused on sales without the profit component, started my event planning company, the Party Goddess, and thought, okay, I don't have 100 employees now. I don't have all this overhead. I can now focus. Now I can make money. Well, I got caught up again, and I got caught up in this celebrity client and this project and how great this will look, you know? And I just forgot, like, but how much money am I going to be able to make from, let's say, the opening of the Hollywood Bowl? Like, yes, I know it's really cool to say, but how long can I run on that? And so now I'm, you know, married again. This time I married a CFO, so smarter. I'm heading in the right direction as far as at least the financial advice will be free. And I'm at dinner with my parents, and I remember the night so well because I was going, yes, and we're going to do this, and we're going to, you know, we might have just gotten Britney Spears as a client. I don't know. We had some high profile stuff. And I remember my dad was like, okay, he had heard this story for a very long time. And he was like, but are you making any money? And he was so frustrated with me. And I was like, if you ever have had that moment where the tears are just like right here, you know, and you are just praying they don't go over, because you know that the one second they go over, you are never going to stop crying. And I was like, please don't cry, please don't cry, please don't cry. But I remember very well at that moment, I thought, there is no way. I am changing this story. Like, I cannot do this anymore. I've got to come up with, I got to figure this out. And so, you know, anytime I would talk to my accountant, I would feel stupid. I would feel like, oh, I shouldn't ask these questions about money, or I should already know them, or I was an idiot. And then I thought, well, at the end of the day, what is business and how do you make money? And For me, I broke it into four buckets, A, B, C, and D. And I just started categorizing my expenses that way and came up with my own system that was simple, was uncomplicated. And I thought, okay. And then ironically, you'll probably recognize this, the special event, you know, which is one of our first industry conventions we ever had. And at the time, you could get a free education pass if you taught a class. So I was like, awesome, I'm going to teach my class on this little rinky dink system I have. Class is going to be an hour. I'm going to, you know, go drink at 5 o'clock. Well, it was like standing room only in this class. And I was like, and then I was like, you guys, you do realize, did you all come in late? I don't think so, because I just told you the story of how, like, I am not the girl to listen to. Yet you are asking questions and you are still here, and there is standing room only. Like, I am the business train wreck. And I remember so clearly, and it really kind of broke my heart, because somebody said, yes, but you're the only one answering our questions. And I was like, what? And they're like, we just want to know about pricing. Like, we just, like, how do you do it? Like, do you charge a percentage? Do you charge a flat rate? Like, what's the best way to do it? And I was like, well, I'll keep telling you how I do it. I don't think it's necessarily the best way, but I'll do my best. And they're like, well, we want to follow up with you. Like, do you have more? And I was like, do I have more? Dude, I did this for like a free pass. No, I don't have more. I don't want anything to do with what I got going here. But it kind of created this groundswell, and I ended up writing a book called But Are You Making Any Money? And of course, dedicating it to my dad, who finally got me on the right track after, you know, many decades of being his daughter. But the point was, is that it kind of took off into this, it took its own path, which was, I seem to get people that I, you know, now work with one-on-one, but very smart women who left the law practice, started, you know, some creative business, or And yet we all have had the same problems. We are certainly smart and we're certainly capable, but we're not sure exactly how to set up our pricing and make sure we're making money. And then the first person that challenges our pricing, we say, oh, okay, like I'll cut the rate a little bit, or I'll, and you just can't. And so for me, it was doing it wrong for so long and losing millions of dollars, literally, to where I just said, okay, enough is enough. And I simplified everything. And now, of course, my focus is on, you know, projects and clients and places I do make money, but it has to be very purposeful. So the very, very long-winded thing is, if that even remotely sounds like you, I'm sorry, but there isn't.
Well, I think it's so interesting because I'm in it personally, I feel like I'm halfway in that like weird generational place where I was raised where, like, you know, you go to school, you get a job, the job will take care of you. It was not my path. It didn't lead me to happiness. It didn't feel fulfilling. I knew at 15 that I wanted to have a wedding planning business. But you know, you don't talk about money.
No,
you don't, you know, that's, you know, you don't go to somebody's house and ask what something costs. You would never ask how much money someone
never,
I mean, it's so disrespectful and just classless and oh my God, it's embarrassing.
Right.
It's supposed to look good.
Right.
And it's supposed to look pretty and everything
is supposed to be
fine.
Yeah.
But then you go out into the real world. And while my path was similar in that, you know, I got married, I got divorced. I now end up with my second husband, which is when I start the business. I actually went and took a job at a restaurant because I liked him. Chased him around for a while. So,
Great. So
second marriage love story mirrors your first, but we get to this point where I was like, okay, I really want to start this business. And because my husband has an economics degree, because he understands numbers so deeply, he was like, okay, so what does that cost? And I'm like, well, business cards are like 100. I don't know. I can get a WordPress site for like 12. And he said, he's like, we need to sit down. Like, we'd already had one child. He's like, you need a plan. And I said, well, I've written a business plan. He's like, you need a financial plan. And so I was very fortunate in that I had a partner in business and in life who knew more than I did. And yet he didn't know our industry.
Right.
And so then I go and I end up at Engage, which was in so many ways, especially, you know, 8-10 years ago when we all started kind of coming together, finishing school, and there was so much of an emphasis put on the educational side. And so when I heard you, I said, and it's that saying, but are you making any money, is something that I've now said a million times to a million people when I'm coaching, when I'm writing, when I'm talking,
right?
Because it's such a simple statement. But you don't really know how to answer it. You were very clearly the first woman that I saw and truly one of the first professionals that was so incredibly open about pricing and money without telling me. Like, at the time, I didn't know how much money you were making. I didn't know what you were charging. I didn't know how you were doing it. But you definitely had this sense of ease, and it was inspiring because having hard conversations about money became the backbone of my business. Of this, we shouldn't do this in the dark. It's not something that I think that we should hide from our clients. It's not something that anyone who listens to my podcast for a long time knows I don't like to play the gender card. I don't like to do any of that.
But sometimes you have to. I'm sorry. There's some things to me, at least, that are undeniable.
100%. There is a difference. Their gender is real. The different way that a woman is perceived and a woman is treated. And I'm not necessarily saying it's sexist. I think that women are these extraordinary creatures and we have all of these amazing soft skills. If we try to be one of the guys, my opinion, and you don't even have to agree with me, if we try to be one of the guys, we are voluntarily giving up the inherent strength and the beauty and the genius of who and what we are.
Absolutely.
And so I don't think, like, I have no desire to be just one of the guys, but I do think that as women, we don't talk to each other enough. So let me ask, like, what did your last client pay you?
Right.
How did you charge? I got screwed on my taxes. Who were you talking to? Because there's this undercurrent of like weird competition, and there's this, and it's all of this stuff that's very feminine and very female. And it does come from being underdogs as women, because we're not supposed to be business owners. It comes from being underdogs because I was not raised in a house where finances were discussed like that. My father was a civil servant. My mother was a stay-at-home wife and mom.
Right.
There was no conversation about a P&L.
Right.
And nobody talked to me about investing. I only ever got my first 401k because I had a boss who said, what are you contributing? And right. I'm like, to the company, like it's work.
You're like, I'm contributing my life. Don't you know?
Right. Like, I'm here from 6 a.m. till midnight. What do you mean? And he was like, honey, and he sat me down and he taught it. And so this idea that money is not something that we should talk about, or we're just so lucky to be in the industry. We're just so lucky to be here. We're so grateful that we should take it on the chin for everything. And the minute that you stand up and say, actually, no, this is what it costs to be. And I did my finances differently from what you did. Mm-hmm. My husband and I sat down and said, all right, what does it cost to support the life we have today?
Right.
When we were starting the business, to do nothing else but live the way we're living, what does it cost?
Right.
How do we want
to... That's a fun conversation.
Oh, it's and I'm still married.
I know. Amazing. That's,
We do it twice a year. Mm-hmm. And it's become like these how you do in touch bases for us have become really important. How do we live today? What does it cost? How do we want to live? What does that cost? In order to do that, how much money do we need to make? And then how much do I want to work?
And then like the classic, it's like the guy from Hunt's Ketchup, like E.L. Hunt or whatever his initials are. I love his like three prong success thing, which is what do you need to do? Like, what do you want? What do you need to do to get it? And then number three is so important. Are you willing to do that? Because we can all say, which I mean, most people don't even have the conversation. 99.999% of people don't even have the conversations you're having with your husband. But let's say you get to that point. You're like, okay, this is how much we need to sustain this lifestyle. Then the next piece is, okay, I'm going to have to do X number of podcasts a year or X number of events or X number of whatever widget making business you're in to support this. And that translates at the moment to 70 hours a week. And am I willing to do that for 51 weeks a year? And when you go
51, how'd you take a week back?
Kind of trying to be gracious, thinking you're going to have a week off, like you're going to project to have a week off if you can. Now, we all know you're probably not going to get it, but let's see, I'm trying. So can you do it for 51 weeks a year, all those hours, and then hopefully cram all your vacation time into, you know, this 1 week? And at the end of the day, though, if you can really be honest with yourself, that's not easy to do. And so then at the end of the day, I like things that are math problems, right? It's then, okay, get more efficient. You can make a lot more money if you just get more efficient, or you can raise your prices. I mean, there are very specific things you can do, or you can change your lifestyle. But let's say that's off the table, you know, because you've already got your whatever balloon mortgage, high mortgage, jumbo mortgage. So it becomes a math problem. But if you approach it that way, to me, that's when you make progress, which is why you're making progress. If you didn't have those touch bases and you just go, oh, I don't want to talk about it. It doesn't work. But now I would imagine when you have those meetings with your husband, it's not that big a deal. I mean, it's not too dramatic. You're just.
No, it's for us, it's a part of life. And it's also, I think, workshopping that with him. And having access to resources, to other planners and other creative professionals who came before me, finding a network of people that were willing to have really open and honest conversations about that. But doing all of those things and now being able to translate it, and we have been able to separate the emotionality of money, because money is, it's such an emotional trigger. It's an emotional, I mean, I remember I always earned my own money. Mm-hmm. I always earned as an employee, as an executive director or whatever, and running multiple chain, you know, restaurants and nightclubs and hotels. I always made really good money, especially being in, like, at the time, my 20s.
Yeah.
And, you know, making $250,000, $300,000 at 26 is
you're a baller. My God.
I can make it rain at Starbucks. Yeah. Don't even ask me. Yeah, I want the guacamole because I can. Like, it was ridiculous.
Give me 10 guacamoles.
Right. I'm paying a round of it for everyone.
Right.
Then, like, you turn around, and my husband and I, up until actually last year, about a year and a half ago, kept our finances separate. And I actually preferred that in a lot of ways. When I started the business, I went from making lots and lots and lots of money to I have no dollars. And, like, for the first time in my adult life, calling and saying, like, can I go to Target?
How are we doing here? Can I get, like, I'd like to get a Starbucks at Target. Like,
and he was like, how did you get this number? Don't call me for stupid things. Yeah. And I was like, no, seriously, like, I don't make any money. And so now I don't feel like I have a right to go and buy something. Do I really need that t-shirt? Do I really need to do it? It's like the emotional component. And he was like, all right, we gotta get rid of all of this.
Right.
And I had to learn in my 30s that money is not, it's not the string that gets pulled. It needs to not be that. It needs to be understood that money is a tool, just like your cell phone or your laptop or a pen. And that when you have these things, when you have money, it's a resource to move the needle forward. And it is not, it's not this judgment of who you are as a person.
Absolutely.
It's not an indictment. It's not all of these different things, which I really struggled with. Once I was able, and the only way that I got over it, and I think probably from what I'm hearing is that you did as well, is like the more you talk about it, the more you work it.
Then it's nothing. Like,
yeah,
it's the more, and that's the big picture message of all this, is start somewhere by just having a conversation. Now, I'm not saying you need to go to a person you just are having, you know, a dinner party at their house, and you say, how much does that cost and how much... It isn't that extreme, but what it is deciding who is kind of in your little network that you trust. And remember, it has to be give and take. So it's kind of like you start with your little baby mastermind group where you say, listen, this just happened to me. Has that ever happened to you? Or, and you very quickly know if somebody is on the same page with you, because they either clam up or they go, oh my gosh, yes, that happened to me. And I changed my contract. Give me your contract and I'll fix yours for you, you know? And then you start going, now we're cooking with gas here. Like, okay. Or somebody says, oh my gosh, yeah, I don't even use PayPal anymore. I use XYZ because the fees were too high. And that made the biggest difference. And so you just get used to texting your girlfriends and saying, hey, who do you like for, I'm making this up, bookkeeping? Who do you like for, blah, blah, blah. Do you have a good contractual lawyer? Should I rent? Like, all those things. And then it's no different than, hey, listen, you know, do you like this at Costco, the olive oil, or not? You know, I mean, it just is part of the regular dialogue, because as entrepreneurs, I call it the entrepreneurial bleed. There is no real separation, right, between our business lives and our personal lives. I would love it if there were, you know, I'd love to be able to get off this podcast and be like, okay, no, I'm not going to think about business and I'm just going to go. But it doesn't work that way. It is always coming together. And so if you, it's in mesh. So if you think of the conversation, like you would just text and be like, listen, it's time for me to switch hairdressers. And you would text your girlfriend. Well, you can do the same thing about, listen, I think it's time I've outgrown my accountant, or my accountant is retiring. What do I do? Or guess what? My accountant just said he doesn't want to work with me anymore. Like, what do I do? And you start to realize you think you're this crowd of one with everything, right? Like you think you're the only one who has ever been fired by their lawyer or ever been fired by their client or whatever. It's not the case. And you just have to find the people who are willing to be honest enough to tell you, oh, please, you know, yeah, I had that too. And you'll be fine. Doesn't seem like it now, but you will be fine.
It's the same thing like when you go through a divorce the first time. I was the first of my friends to get divorced. And for years, I was the divorced friend.
Yes.
And
what do we do with her?
Right. Like, can she still come? I don't know. What are we doing? Is she like, is it weird? But for a long time, I was the divorced friend. Well, 20 years later, all of a sudden people call you and go, so divorce, like talk to me about divorce.
Because and you're like, now everybody's divorced. And then you're like, oh God. Okay. Yeah.
Right. But the nice thing is I think that I didn't make the decision as openly as you did, but my life was very public, especially right. From the time that I was a child. I lived a really public life with a very public family, and I didn't have a sense of real anonymity. Right. And so I had this very clear understanding that like my life was literally going to be an open book, and I could either run from it and try to hide it, which was never going to work, or I could just embrace it and have it just, if it wasn't a big deal to me, right. It wasn't a big deal to anyone else. It was the hiding that
exactly. That's what makes everything very interesting to everybody. As soon as something is hush hush, the minute somebody outs their own story, it's like all the air is out of those balloons. I mean, it's like,
there's nothing to say.
There ain't nothing here.
Right. Like, what are you going to say that I haven't already said? What are you going to discover? And when you do that, there's such a freedom in it. And you realize what an absolute utter resource you can be to other people. And if there was, I am a glass half full, what's the silver lining? I can always learn from this person. Right. And there's been times in my life where I was like, there is no silver lining. Nothing good will ever come of this. There will never be an upside. And even in the last 2 years with losing my father when he passed, you don't think that there's ever an upside. And it's not an upside, but you are able to take that and be more empathetic and
absolutely. More open
to understand someone else's pain, to be a place where when somebody loses a parent, a sibling, a child,
right. They
can come to you. And so in many ways, all of that circles back to money, because I remember being at dinner with a group of girlfriends who is now my core group.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time you make friends as a business owner and as a woman and as a creative professional, like kind of very gingerly, because you're taking each other's temperature and you're kind of seeing how things go. And one night we're all at dinner and we're all on our best behavior because we're still fairly new friends and we have this working, you know, relationship. Yeah. And two of us are competitors, which is something that's just so fucking stupid. But like we both do the same thing in the same market. Mm-hmm. And somebody said something about money. And I got very, very quiet because I was for a second, I was embarrassed to say what I was charging.
Right.
Because it was so much higher than the person who made the comment.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I felt this gap. And I said, wait a minute. Like, first of all, if I'm making this money, then I can't be wrong, because there are people willing to pay it. And if I'm going to be a friend, the kind of friend that I want to be, if I'm going to be an educator,
yeah,
which is something that I pride. And if I'm going to elevate the entire industry, I was like, well, wait a minute, hold on. What did you say you charge? And she told me, and I was like,
you,
I go, okay. I said, just, I'm not saying this to brag, but have you ever, this is how I price.
Yeah.
And she was like, what? And she goes, how are you still in business? And I said, how are you still in business?
Exactly. That's my question. How are they still in business? Yeah.
I was like, she's like, how, like, people won't pay that. And I said, but they will. And this little group of ours suddenly are shutting down the restaurant and we're all opening our books. This is how I get paid. This is how much money I invest in my business. This is, you know, it was hard for me to not do my own taxes. Up until a few years ago, I did my own taxes on an Excel spreadsheet and then gave it to my accountant who was like, is this right? I was like, uh-huh. And I signed something and that was it.
Yeah.
I said, it was hard for me to let go of that. But we found this company who does this. And well, who are you talking to about that? And the floodgates opened. And now what has happened is everybody is making more money.
Exactly.
Everybody has a better quality of life. And she has now taken that and told people in her network that aren't in mine. And so that's how information and education are the great equalizer. That is the thing that takes you from wherever it is that you are to wherever it is you want to be.
Right.
And we've gotten so sucked into TikTok and Instagram and the pretty that we forget that the World Wide Web actually has all the things that we need to learn. And we can now learn it for free.
And if you, but you just have to do it. Like you just have to actually read it on the internet and then be like, oh, okay, I'm going to now track my time. And I'm actually going to keep doing it. Not just 30
not
seconds
this week.
Of the TikTok, you know? Yeah. And I'm going to do it. And I think it's that old school discipline and grit. And, you know, when I grew up, I mean, granted, I had parents who were tough on me, thank goodness, but there was none of this like, oh, you don't feel well, you don't, too bad. You freaking get up and do your job. And if you say you're going to do it, you're going to do it. And your word is everything. And you just follow through. Period, end of subject. And so this like, oh, but this didn't happen. You know, it's like next. A lot of things don't happen. Figure it out. Like you can figure it out. And believe me, if I can figure it out, freaking anybody can figure it out. Lord.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, we just were at the DJ Collective in Scottsdale. And my keynote was on designing your business and designing your life and how there is no separation and that you, I think that balance is bullshit. I think that there's only intense focus on the one thing that is in front of you.
Yeah.
I think that if your home life is chaotic, if your relationship is chaotic, if your kids are burning things down, then that will bleed into your work.
Yeah.
When your work life and when your business is faltering and when you don't have a solid sense.
Yep.
Like you can't look at your husband and be like, oh, let's have this romantic, sexy
doesn't work
between us because you've got a mountain of stuff in the back of your head. You can't be really present with your kids. And I think that one of the traps that we've gotten into, because I know that I felt this way, and I know a lot of other creatives and women that I've spoken to felt this way. There is this need to prove ourselves and our worth. There is this thing of I should just be happy to be here. And maybe this wasn't my path. And there were all these other things.
Right.
And who do you think you are to own the business? And who do you think you are to ask for that much money? And you know what? Why do you need to live in that house or drive that car? And why do your kids can go to private school or public school? All of these things that we felt this need to justify. And so we get on the hamster wheel and we go.
Right.
And my fear was that at the end of it, I was going to look back and my memories, if I had any from the blur, were going to be of sitting at this desk, answering emails, doing work that I didn't love for people that I didn't respect for money that didn't make my life better.
Right.
And so having the conversation. So if there are people out there, and I don't want to just make it women, because I do know that there are men that listen to the podcast.
Right.
We are thrilled to have you here. Thank you for showing up. But I'm like, not to have a share moment, like I love men. But I also love,
obviously, the serial mirror here. Yeah. Yeah.
Some of us need to do it more than once. Some of us have the starter, but like you, I love men. I love women. I love business. I love money. I love being able to turn around and say to my children, mommy built this.
Yeah.
And to be able to turn around and say like, and daddy built this and mommy and daddy built this together. And my boy knows that a woman can do it. And my girl knows that there's nothing stopping her. So if you're a man or a woman and you're creative and you're listening to this, what are the three things that someone should do in the next 30 days mm-hmm. to start the process?
So the easiest thing, of course, is to buy the book, because you buy the book and that's a shameless plug. But at the end of the day, you'll blow through it quickly and you'll see if it resonates.
The book is fantastic. I will say that. I had it 10 years ago. I have it now.
Thank you. And it's one of those things you can pick up when you just need a refresher. And the best part about it is that it demystifies all of this. Remember, there are entire industries of accountants and finance people and that are designed to make it seem complicated, because if it's complicated, right, you need those people. But as soon as you know the basics and you can empower yourself, you're in a totally different position. So number one, I'd say, read the book. Number two, I would say absolutely positively track your time for a minimum of a week. And then because you will see the patterns will show up so clearly. You will see, wow, really do it. If you log onto Facebook on your phone at this time, you log that you were on there, not time. Oops, it was 25 minutes. And just see where the time is going. Because then that's going to give you the pattern of, okay, this is where I have some flexibility. And then the next piece is just to say, what are those activities that I could sub? So if you're like, okay, listen, I'm not going to give up Facebook. That's unreasonable, or Instagram, whatever it is. And so you say, but I don't know that I need to check it 6 times a day or whatever. So fine, I'll do it 2 times a day. And I'm going to take the 20 minutes that I save and I'm going to call, past clients, or I'm going to 20 minutes, I'm going to email certain people, or I'm going to text them and check in and try to drum up some business. And when you take that activity that's the lowest producing activity for you and replace it with one of your top producing activities, the whole game changes. And then you go, Facebook, forget it. And you are like, this is what, because it becomes a high, right? You're like, wow, oh my gosh, all I did was like call that person and like they wanted to do a holiday party, or they wanted to do, and that's the thing. So I would say those are the three things, is the book, and then track your time, and then really look at your time sheet and just say, okay, listen, what could I substitute? Because it's just substituting. Nobody's saying go cold turkey. Nobody's saying you got to work 100 hours a week. Lord knows. I'm going in the totally opposite direction. But be purposeful about where you spend your time, because time is the only non-renewable resource.
Well, it's funny because we started talking about money and we ended up talking about time, because really time is money. And it's the only thing.
Sure is.
It's the only thing that you're never going to be able to get back.
Always make more money. There's a million ways. You could go to Sunset Boulevard and make money right now, but you are never
going
to
live in Vegas.
Right. But you're never going to get that time back. Sorry.
So. No, I know. Oh, I'm never going to get those boobs back after my 2 years. But well, I mean,
that's a whole other conversation. You could, but
But that takes time and money. Right. And right now it's the time that's more than anything. So one other thing that I just want to say to people, for those of you who are looking at the book, But Are You Making Any Money by Marley Major on Amazon. If you want to get a better sense of who she is, how she talks, how she educates, and what she's about, I just went and did a refresher. I took your Profit Goddess mini course just because I was like, well, I knew we were going to be talking. And I think that, we haven't seen each other in a while. It was just nice to kind of watch you
back in the group.
From afar. And so if you're out there and you're looking for a greater introduction, it's mini.theprofitgoddess.com. Okay. So this was so much fun. I actually love Pasadena. I met my husband working for the company that owns Sushi Roku and Boa Steakhouse.
Oh, wow.
So cool. I was director for IDG for 6 years, and the Sushi Roast Coup in Pasadena is still one of my favorite restaurants.
It is really good. Well, you have to call me when you're here then.
And I absolutely, absolutely will. I'm in Glendale quite a bit, so we will get together for sushi next. All right. Thank you so much. And if anyone else has any questions, how do they follow you on social?
At the Party Goddess or at the Profit Goddess. Very simple. Or Twitter at the Party Goddess.
Beautiful. All right. Thank you so much for being here today. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.